forgot to include that disclaimer slide, but I have no way of profiting from lying to you, so you don't have to worry. So the point of this work was to compare the power of a set of exact tests for detecting clustering of events in small populations. So the kind of thing we're interested in is illustrated by this. So imagine you have a small confined population, like a school or a prison, army base, something like that, and you're just watching the number of cases of a disease that you see every week. So you get a time series like this, and most of the time you have, you know, one case, no case. Sometimes you might have four like this. So whenever you compile that data, you see in this huge bar plot, it would look like this. And what we have are counts on the y-axis, the number of cases of a disease seen in each cell. And the cells here are the weeks. And they're arranged on the bottom. The tests that we were studying in these power analyses are specifically for data sets like this, where the cells are ordered. So if you have a different case, like disease cases in the wings of a hospital or something like that, where there might not necessarily be an inherent ordering to the cells, then you would use a different set of tests. But these tests are specifically for ordered data sets. Okay, and the tests are trying to tell us whether data like these have any significant amount of clustering. It's hard to tell in a small data set like this. It's not obvious. But one of these, the one down there in the corner with the box, was actually generated at random. And all of these other plots were generated by particular disease spread mechanisms to generate the clustering. And this is basically what we were doing in these power analyses. We're generating lots of data sets like these and then using the tests. Conventionally, you would use a parametric test like a chi-square test. And this shows you why it might not be appropriate to use something like a chi-square test for small populations, for small data sets. And each of these points represents 10,000 simulations where the cases were randomly assigned to the cells. And you have number of events varying on the bottom. And you have lots of different numbers of total cells that are just absorbed in the noise, kind of. And what the y-axis shows you is the proportion of those simulations which had for which the test returned a significant result at a level of 0.05. And so what you see is as the number of events gets smaller and smaller, the p-values are less and less reliable for a parametric test like this. It can be over or below, but you can't really trust the p-value. So an alternative to a parametric test like the chi-square test for clustering are exact tests, which is what we're talking about. And these just kind of work on the most basic level of probability. Consider something like this where you have five cells and three events. And what you could do is just count all the different ways that you could arrange those events in the cells. You could be like that, or it could happen like that, like this. And there are altogether all these different ways, 10 ways total, that we can arrange those three events in the five cells. You might come up with your own statistics, such as if we see three events in a row, like on the bottom, then we consider that as a cluster, right? So if you want to attach some sort of probability statement to that, you would just say, okay, how many of all of the possible cases have three events in a row? And in this example, we see three out of the 10 cases. So even if the events were distributed at random in the cells, we'd expect to see that degree of clustering 30% of the time. So this probably wouldn't be a good statistic, but it's just an example. I was going to derive one of the tests, but it's probably a little overambitious this close to lunch. But suffice it to say that You can take something like the binomial theorem, which most people are familiar with, and that's what all the terms mean. And you can make some clever substitutions and come up with a different test. So, for example, this form we have right here on the next slide is going to show a different test, the binomial max test. And all it is we're just replacing some things. For example, the W over C term for the probability of success is the window size compared to the total number of cells. So you can just do simple things like this and come up with different statistics. In this study, we looked at these five exact tests. The binomial was the one I just whizzed through, the empty cells test, for example, just counts how many empty cells there are in your sequence. Hypergeometric max is following a different distribution, but sort of like the binomial. Longest run of empty cells is counting that. How long is the longest run of adjacent empty cells? Range scan is sort of scanning over your time series. And we compared these tests to some parametric tests, chi-square test and two different versions of the g-test. And we just generated data, 500 simulations for each combination of these parameters. So we varied the number of cells from 10 to 100. Number of cases was varied relative to the number of cells from 20% to 2 times the number of cells. Strength of clustering varied at 10 different levels. Some of them have this window and that varied too, but not all of them. And we generated data according to 8 different kinds of mechanisms. 7 of these are non-random. One of them's random. This is the same slide we saw earlier, the same data sets, but with each data set labeled with the mechanism that we use to generate the data. So you see the random sprinkle is down in the bottom left-hand corner. And these just have the disease spread in different ways. So for example, the sprinkle grow mechanism, which is next to the random sprinkle, the way that works is you just sprinkle a bunch of cases throughout the cells, and then the next iteration you sprinkle some more cases in the cells that already have some and the cells adjacent to them. So that's the sprinkle grow. It's growing from a few initial inoculants. There are a whole bunch of different ones. For example, the cure singles above that sprinkles them all randomly, and then if there are any singletons, it removes them with a probability that's set by the cluster strength, and it removes them and puts them into cells that had more than one. So we won't go through all these, but there are a bunch of different ways that you can simulate disease spread. And here are some of the results. These simulations generated something like 10,000 curves or something, so there's no way to go through all that. But this gives you a sort of a picture of the extremes of the range of parameters that we looked at. And on the top row, that's the fewest number of cells that we looked at, and the bottom row is the largest number of cells we looked at. And then on the left side, that's the fewest number of cases we looked at, and on the right side, it's the most number of cases. And what we're looking at is power on the y-axis and cluster strength, how strong the signal is, on the x-axis. And then all we want to look at here really is comparing green to white. So it's not that as complicated as it looks. The green lines represent power for the different exact tests, and the white lines represent the power for the parametric tests that we compared them to. And this is for a particular mechanism, and I'll flash these slides up for you for each of the different mechanisms, but they all basically look the same. And the thing to notice most is that there seems to always be a white line above the green, any of the green lines, right? And you can't really distinguish the different curves. But the chi-square test is marked with the x's. And even when some other parametric test is above the chi-square test in almost every single situation that we looked at is more powerful than any of the exact tests. So this is, you know, one of the mechanisms. Here's another one of the mechanisms. Same basic thing. And then I'm just going to sort of flash through these. You can see that the same pattern is holding in all these different mechanisms. So that's one thing, is the comparing the parametric to the non-parametric. Another thing that you can't really see, it's hard to bring out, but if you compare just the order of the lines for the exact tests, so which line is on top of which one in any of these cases, what we find is that the ranking of the power of the test doesn't really change much across the different parameterizations and across the different mechanisms, which was surprising to us because we were really hoping it would. So since it doesn't change much, we can summarize the results for the exact tests in a figure like this, and these are just box plots for each of the different tests, and the detectability is something we just sort of made up, and this is the cluster intensity at which the test reaches a power of 0.8, and 0.8 was just set as an arbitrary level of power that we considered a minimum. And so in these, more powerful is lower down the detectability scale because you have strong power to detect even weak signals. And what you see is that the power of a lot of the exact tests is really bad. The averages are way up at 1. A lot of the tests never even made it up to a power of 0.8, so they're not very worthwhile. But the empty cells test has consistently high power and is pretty robust to all the different parameterization situations, which is shown by the size of that box. It's pretty small. And for example, the two max tests have a lot of outliers. All those points are considered outliers. But they work okay for a certain couple of mechanisms that are specifically tailored to the way those tests work, and which is represented in these box plots. But even then, when we're only considering those situations where these tests perform the best, the empty cells test still outperforms them. So we have three conclusions from this work so far. The first one was that there's a surprising sort of lack of sensitivity of the exact tests to the different disease spread mechanisms and the different parameterizations. And that was disappointing for us because what we hoped to do was to sort of be able to rank the performance of each test for each of these different disease spread mechanisms, so that whenever you had a pattern in front of you and you run all of the tests on that pattern, you could use that to sort of cull out certain disease spread mechanisms as having caused that pattern. But we can't really do that with what we looked at here, but this result is tentative because it depends on how representative these disease spread mechanisms are, which we just sort of made up, how representative they are of nature. The second thing was that the chi-squared test is almost always more powerful than any of the exact tests. So you would only really want to use the exact tests in situations where there's an especially high cost to false alarms, where you really needed to tightly control your type 1 error rate. But if the more important thing is to always detect a cluster, then the chi-square test might be fine. And the final thing was that if you don't know much about the system you're studying, you don't know how the diseases are spread, and you don't know what the prevalence is really, then the empty cells test is pretty powerful and pretty robust. And we can tentatively recommend using that, and that's published. Some of these exact tests aren't published, but that one is, and I can give you the reference if anybody's interested. And that's all.
Okay. At this time, we definitely would like to thank all of our presenters for their hard work and giving us updated information. I can say as an epidemiologist, I'm remiss myself. My name is Oscar Allen. I am the Director of Epidemiology and Public Health Planning for Rockland County Department of Health in New York. And I'm also a governing counselor for the EPI section, the section which has, of course, hosted this this session. So as a result of that, my own disclosure, I would say I have no doubt that I will try to find in my next outbreak a way, I guarantee you, Jack, of implementing sprinkle grow into some of the presentations there. At this point, we would like to entertain any questions from the audience for any of our speakers. We have some time, so please don't be shy. Just raise your hand and indicate which speaker you'd like to question or comment. Going once.
Do you think that there was any effect, or there would have been an effect on your results if you would have excluded people with certain previous diagnoses like MS, as you mentioned?
Okay, let me repeat the question. Would there have been any impact or effect by excluding individuals with previous diagnoses such as MS? And this question is for our first speaker.
Dr. Lapierre?
Sure.
That's a really good question, because I don't know if you knew this in asking the question, but virtually everyone is diagnosed with something else before they get a diagnosis of Lyme disease. So we have many people diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, both of those, rheumatoid arthritis, a number of people with ALS, people with, not in the sample, but in other samples, Parkinson's, heart disease, depression, autism. It's not clear how much a bacteriological infection, such as that of the Borrelia burgdorferi, actually is contributing to other illness manifestations versus how much it's just, other diagnoses that are misdiagnosed. Anecdotally, some people are getting incredibly better when they get on antibiotic therapy with some of these other illnesses. A very public example in the book Cure Unknown, written by Pamela Weintraub, a recent bestseller about the science of the politics of Lyme disease, talks about David Martz, who is very public about his ALS diagnosis, which seems to have been resolved by getting on antibiotic therapy for Lyme disease. He's the incoming president of the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society 6 years later, after he had a prognosis of being about to die and becoming increasingly paralyzed. He's doing incredibly well. And so I just came from the International Lyme and Associated Disease Conference, where I met a woman who had been diagnosed with MS in a wheelchair, and you would never know it. It's a very controversial illness, but it seems like there's some medical mysteries here, and instead of being locked in an emotional debate, which seems to be the case right now, it seems like the science really needs to keep pushing forward and resolve some of these medical mysteries.